This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 21. You've been mancadded. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the mancadding incident and what you should do as a coach or a player if you find yourself in that situation, or even if you don't. We talk about spin bowling fitness, and we discuss just exactly how IPL superstars can chase down so many runs in so few overs. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's time for another Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. If you want to play better cricket, if you want to coach better cricket, this is the place to be. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here, and there's a fantastic panel with me this week to help you improve your game. Let's start with the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras.
Hello, all.
Next on the line, it's the cricket pro at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Welcome to the show, Lavers.
Hello there. How are you?
And finally, of course, we have the evergreen, the ready for action. It's the only way I can describe him. It's Berners.
Ever green, ever ginger. I'm well, thanks, guys. How are you?
You got a tinge. You got a tinge of the ginger there, haven't you?
Auburn.
Yeah, Titian. Strawberry blonde, perhaps.
Auburn.
Let's discuss some cricket, because we need to talk about Joss, don't we? I mean, Garras, you've got interest in this one. Joss Butler, who's gone from a hero to controversial figure, scoring lots of runs and then finding a way to get himself run out and looking like a little bit of a dope. So, Garras, what's happened with Joss Butler over the last few days?
Well, I think what we saw on Saturday in the ODI was just confirmation of what we knew already, to be honest. You know, he's a fantastic cricket talent. He has been for a number of years, and I was lucky enough to be around him right at the outset, I suppose, when he was 12 years old. And as I say in an article that's upcoming, he's the only 12-year-old that I've ever watched that I could confidently predict would play international cricket. He had so many attributes. Wow. And he showed them all on Saturday. I thought it was amazing innings, you know, coming in at 111 for five or somewhere around that. And to effectively take the game to the opposition when there'd been a real sort of like a lull, hadn't there, in proceedings, 130 balls without a boundary, and then to do what he did, I wasn't massively surprised at. And when my mate Michael Vaughan said that he'd take all his clothes off and run home if Sri Lanka lost the game, I did comment back to him that maybe he'd made that comment a bit too early. When I spoke to him that evening, he said he'd have done it, but it's a long way back. It's a long way back to Cheshire. And then, of course, this yesterday, you know, earlier in the week, when he gets run out backing up, and it's very controversial. And again, lots of people have said a lot of things about it, but in many ways, I would put the blame at his door, really, because it wasn't as if he wasn't informed that they were aware of what was going on.
Yeah,
they'd given a couple of warnings, and then obviously he ends up getting run out. And the other thing to me is, you know, what was the actual benefit of going out of his crease so early? Because it wasn't as if he was looking to get back for two, which is what a lot of people do, isn't it, when they back up to spin, is if they're looking to keep somebody on strike, maybe like Treadwell tried to do in the game at Lord's the other day. People try to get ahead of a game, but there was no need for him to do that. And ultimately, my view, and if I was working with Joss directly now, I think I'd probably say, look, you know, you got two warnings and then chose to leave yourself vulnerable, and whilst everybody, including Peter Moores and Alistair Cook, have talked about the decision that was made by Angelo Matthews, I think he didn't do anything wrong. It's something I don't want to see in the game. And if I could give Angelo any advice, if it was to happen again, I think after the second time, I'd have been, as a captain, I'd have said, look, if you do it again and my bowler takes the bails off, I will uphold the appeal. And that's the only thing that Angelo Matthews could have possibly have done any different. So I think he's an innocent party. And to me, Joss, you know, made an error there, which which was a great shame off the back of a fantastic innings. But that kid is here to stay, I can tell you that, and I could have told you that in 2003.
That's an interesting point of discussion, isn't it, Lavers, in that I think those kind of issues are often swept under the carpet when it comes to coaching and club cricket, that level where there isn't necessarily a consensus of opinion about what's right, what's wrong, and, you know, where something is within the laws but not within the spirit and all that kind of thing. So when it comes to that kind of situation, how do you approach it as a coach?
In terms of coaching your own cricketers, I wouldn't be too concerned about coaching my bowlers to do it or not to do it. I think Gareth is absolutely right. You don't legally have to warn them now, but if you warn them and say, look, next time it happens, we will be sending you on your way, that's fair enough. That's more than you've got to do. So from a bowler's perspective, I'd look to, or a fielding captain or coach perspective, that would be the avenue I'd go along. I definitely wouldn't want to get down the into the situation of constantly looking and trying to seek wickets that way. If the situation appeared and there was not necessarily an opportunity, but there was a clear intention from the batter to try and gain ground unfairly, which it is. It is an unfair method of trying to steal 2 or 3 yards. Then I think all my players would be within their rights to do that. But obviously I'd go down that route of making my bowlers and my captain aware of this is the process we want to go down. We want to make it clear to them that if they do it, they know that it will be upheld and they will be on their way. From a batter's point of view, I think always watching the ball, to be honest. If the ball's in the bowler's hands, then look at the ball. It's laziness, really, just to be looking down the other end and drifting along. So keep your eye on the ball, keep your eye on what's going on in the game, and be aware that someone else can do it to you. So if you don't give them the opportunity, then we never have this situation, which is ultimately what we want to see in the future. We don't want to see it happen again, particularly, which means it's down to batters, not down to bowlers.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a conclusion that I came to in an article this week that I wrote about mancadding and the approach that you need to take from the viewpoint of the club side that you're in or the players that you're coaching. And I think you do have to take a position because it's such a controversial thing. And if there's an opportunity for somebody to learn, then you should take that opportunity. And then the question mark falls around, what do you feel about it personally? What's the club's position on it? And how will doing it affect your club or your side's relationship with other clubs and sides? Because you've got to bear that in mind. Even if you think mancadding is perfectly justifiable in all circumstances and you would do it without warning anyone first time, then what fallout would that have on the relationship with the batsman who's done it or the club who's had it done to? So you've got to think about all those things as well. But I think it's very important to think about these things and not ignore them. Burners, ever done it? Ever had it done to you?
No, I've been run out backing up, but never in those circumstances. I think normally the level of cricket I play, normally the umpire has overridden it if anything like that happens. And I haven't actually formally stuck to the rule book. But
don't be silly, son, get on with it.
don't be silly. Look, it's Saturday afternoon. We're all having a bit of a jolly up. But I think it's one of those ones where I was having a conversation with my mate and I was saying if that had been an Australian in the English camp here in the UK, no one would have really begrudged it. Oh, well, hard luck, he's out, we won the game kind of attitude. So I think it's one of those that when it comes around, goes around, then it's just the fact that it was England. It's just the fact that it was their best batsman after an amazing innings. It's just the fact that we were in a bit of trouble. If we'd have been 250 for 3 going into the last 10 and they'd have run out, I don't know, Gary Balance, would everyone have reacted in the same way? Probably not. It's one of those ones, isn't it, really? You can talk all day about it, but I did read something in the newspaper this morning that had a baseball comparison about how the pitcher fires it into first base, when often a very similar scenario occurs, as it does in baseball and cricket, that the guy on base one is trying to creep away. As soon as he sees that guy on the pitching mound, he's shuffling a couple of yards and you'll see the pitcher pull out and he'll fire it into first base. And I tell you what, in baseball, that's absolutely out. You know, there's no question about gentlemanly conduct. It's a tactic and it's used, and they were saying that, you know, cricket built its own perils in this form of allowing this gentlemanly conduct aspect into the game, with the court behinds in amateur cricket, with when the guy's foot's on the line when he's stopping a boundary, how do you really, you know, control that other than at the top end? Yeah. So it's just cricket, isn't it? That's the game, and it's built on a few principles of common decency, I guess.
Nicely put, Berners. Thank you. What a good summary. Let's wrap it up there then, shall we? Let's have the yes-no round. Three questions that we can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more that we want to say. And Berners, you've got the questions this week, so fire away.
First question. Andrew Flintoff will do brilliant things in the T20 Blast.
Yes.
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 Second question. The best team won IPL 7.
No.
Yes.
No.
Third and final question. The whistle should be used with caution in training youngsters.
Yes.
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 Okay, let's go into the mail bag and dig out a couple of questions. A little bit less controversial ground, perhaps. Now we're back on a safer surface. The ice is a lot thicker in this section, but still lots of good information for you. And if you want to send in your question and have it answered as well, then you can do so by sending it in to coach@pitchvision.com. And the best one was a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Berners, you've got an old friend as the first question, I understand.
I have indeed. He's back again. It's that man from the Jailhouse Rock. It's our man, Elvis. And yes, he is full of exciting questioning this show. He's interested to know, as a leg spin bowler, what he should do in the off-season in terms of fitness. I think that's quite an intriguing question, given most of them normally waddling off of about 3 yards and let rip. So maybe some finger exercises, guys. I don't know.
It's great to see, first of all, that he's looking to think about other parts of his game. A lot of players will think solely about their skills and how that preparation of their skills and development of skills can improve their game. So a lot of guys would go away specifically targeting to develop their consistency or their spin or their range of deliveries. But it's good to see he's looking to go and get a bit fitter and maybe look can improve him as a cricketer and as a spinner. First thing I'd always suggest is try and rest a bit. Depending on what type of what level of cricket you're playing at, it's gonna vary just depending on how much time you put in over the season. So a little bit of rest first of all is always a good way to start. Let the body just relax for probably 4 or 5 weeks if you can do. Obviously, spinners aren't putting themselves through as much stress physically as fast bowlers. However, what we can often find is that the spinners are bowling often 2 to 3 times the workload of a fast bowler, especially at the end of the season. So even though the individual delivery isn't as stressful as a fast bowler, there's a lot of fatigue going through the body throughout those extended periods of time. When they're bowling long spells of 10, 12, 15, 20 overs at a time, if not more, as we know can happen in different forms of cricket. In terms of what to do, I think early on we're always looking to regain some base fitness. So that means some basic cardio work just to try and have something we can build upon later on close to the season. I'd always be aware that as a spin bowler or as any cricketer, we're trying to develop our primary skill, but we're also being aware of our other skills, whether they're batting or fielding as well. So we're looking to promote more than one type of aspect of our physical fitness. In terms of the actual program, though, I'd be looking just some basic fitness. So early on, looking at basic strength exercise, so lower body strength, core strength, and obviously some upper body strength work as well. But it's key that we understand the difference between strength and power. And the closer we get to the season, we start to look at introducing some power exercises, which are slightly different. And if anyone who's interested in these sort of things, no doubt they've stumbled across the likes of Stefan Jones, who does a lot of work on fast bowling, power and fitness work there. And it's not actually an area in terms of spin that's concentrated on a lot, but there's still an element of power that's required. And again, as we get close to the season, power can develop into rotational power as well, which we want to try and develop as well. And obviously, given that spinners aren't charging in off 30 yards, there is still very much an element of power that is required in each delivery, but primarily there's a big reliance on balance and consistency and maintaining posture for long periods of time. So it's being able to conduct exercises that are going to challenge that. So squats, lunges are great lower body exercises. Anything core related, so squat and lunge is still going to help you in terms of developing your core stability and your strength there. And then basic power upper body exercises are more likely going to be things like cleans. But in terms of the core, which is going to give you that balance and consistency for a long period of time, there are hundreds of thousands of different ways you can challenge that. Things like simple things like crawling on your hands and feet, forwards, backwards, left and right, really good ways to develop that core. Practicing on unstable surfaces is something people like to do a lot, which is got positive and negative elements to it that would need to be sort of investigated a little bit further, I think. If you put core stability or balance exercises into your search engine, you'll find a thousand ways to develop that. So they're the primary ways I'd be looking to go along. Obviously, depending on the level of cricket you're playing at, there will be different degrees to which you'll really challenge yourself. And presumably we're thinking on the club cricket line where we've maybe able to commit one or two sessions a week potentially, and that's what you can do. And anything you can do to try and help yourself in terms of fitness is going to be beneficial. So don't overdo it. I'm thinking that this is now they're going to take a primary role ahead of your skills and ahead of your tactical thinking, but something that you can do to accompany everything else is a really, really good benefit to have.
Gareth, I know that you wrote a while back around areas around shoulder health for a spinner and focusing the fitness on both the legs and the shoulders as key areas for injury prevention.
Yeah, and just to add to what Sam said, I think he's been incredibly thorough as always on this particular area. But flexibility, mobility, I think is crucial. If you talk to some of the greatest leg spinners, so Mushtaq Ahmed and Shane Warne. There have been times in their career where their mobility in their bowling shoulder in particular hasn't been quite so fluent. And as a result of that, they felt a bit impinged, I suppose, to be able to deliver their skills. So one of the great opportunities about an off-season is to increase the mobility in the shoulder as well as the flexibility and the strength, but to ensure that ultimately you can get that shoulder to go up and over and to perform the things that are going to support your wrist to deliver all your different variations. So to me, that's really important. And certainly from Shane Warne's perspective, probably more than Mushtaq Ahmed, was the ability to have leg strength and stability at the crease so he could then use all the ground forces to transfer the momentum up into the wrist and the fingers so he could weave his magic. So obviously, if we've got a great deal of stability, which comes through our strength being developed, and also, you know, doing things around proprioception as well, I think is important, because as you play longer forms of the game and you play multi-day cricket, you're going to find that the footholds are going to degrade, and as a result, just as it is for a fast bowler, a leg spinner needs to be able to keep themselves balanced, even though that the footing underneath may be at a slight angle or maybe a hole that they've developed over 30 overs of pivoting or whatever the case may be. So again, wobble ball work in the winter, where you stand on an unstable surface and you try to work your ankle in particular around proprioception, is really useful, because at some stage over the course of your career you will come across a foothold or something which is going to be quite difficult, and the more work you do on that, the better.
And fitness is an interesting area, because you know, the basic principle is that you want to keep it as simple as possible, but not too simple. And there are people who make the mistake of saying that the fitness is covered by one particular thing, like going for a run or going to the gym, and they don't think about the entire range. And you get people at the other end who are, you know, using Russian methods of periodization, which, you know, account for every workout for the next 6 years, every rep and every weight. And that's probably too far as well. So you want to find that balance between understanding what the minimum amount is and understanding what too much is.
I think that's a really good point. I mean, sometimes the training programs and the sessions that are being done can be so complicated that they need to have their strength and conditioning coach or fitness coach or whatever you want to call them, you need to be there. And ultimately, you want to have a session or an outline of a session that people can do on their own, they can do safely on their own, because otherwise they become dependent on you as a coach, and that's not really what you want. You want them to be able to go and perform on their own and train on their own and work on their own. So trying to ensure that there's an element of simplicity which lets people lead themselves to a degree is important for their development, especially long term when they move on and they're no longer with you.
Okay, Elvis, hopefully that's given you a few pointers. If you need more, let us know, and let us know what you decide to do and how complex you decide to make things and how simple you decide to make things. I know you'll be listening, Elvis, so let us know. What's the next question, Berners?
Next question comes in from Cups, and it's in reference to the IPL this year. He's saying that there were some quite incredible chases with some magnificent individual performances from the likes of De Villiers and Faulkner. At times they literally single-handedly took teams apart, and his question's really around how they keep calm in these situations, especially in big pressure games, and having the expectation on their shoulders to deliver these kind of performances. In particular, he's referencing the Mumbai Indians chase of 190, where they got it in about 14.4 overs. And he was saying it was largely due to Corey Anderson's fantastic 95. And is this any way related to the fact that the players are going out there and they're pretty much freed up and they don't have any great threat to their performance on their shoulders? They literally go out, throw the kitchen sink at it, and they reap these rewards off the back of that. So what do we think, guys?
I mean, it has been an incredible IPL for run scoring. So, Gareth, how do you assess that?
Well, I think this day and age promotes that. And I think a tournament like the IPL, with so many games being played, also promotes that. But the interesting thing for me is that some of the games at the back end of a tournament also displayed this, where it is more of a cup mentality, isn't it? You know, you either get into the top four and therefore into the playoffs or not. But people were still managing to put down some unbelievable run chases without seemingly a care in the world. But our game is moving that way, isn't it? And I don't think we'd have seen somebody like a Faulkner, an Anderson, or others in previous eras, because the 2020 game has promoted this to sort of happen. So that's the first point, really. I think the game itself dictates that a little bit. But also, what I notice is a bit about people's characteristics. And in those people that you're talking about, you've got some fairly laid-back chaps, really, that are very good at converting and not sort of absorbing pressure, but not necessarily being affected by pressure. And I think in our own teams, we've got those types of people. And we've seen over the years from playing cricket in our own teams that some people seem to thrive in those situations. Josh Butler, who we mentioned earlier, has got a fantastic track record of being not out at the end or taking his side very close to improbable victories as a result of being able to absorb pressure and then not be affected by it. We've got a lad at school now who wouldn't necessarily be one of our top three players aesthetically in terms of what he puts down, but every year he tops the averages, and every year he's not out in two or three games that other people would have probably got 17, got out and lost. He's sort of 85, 90 not out, maybe 100 not out and winning the game. And it does come down to your personality to be able to keep calm and under pressure. And it's something that's fairly innate in some. And I would suggest that somebody like Dhoni, having known a little bit about him and spent a bit of time with him, he's certainly that type of character as well. But going back to the Faulkner one, who's an interesting one for me, I don't know anything about his character. But what I do know is that within the last 12 months or so, he's had a couple of really fantastic innings in India where he turned certain loss into victories. And what he does is he draws upon the experience that he had, and he positively looks back on the experience. And because of that happening, he's able then to recreate the feelings, the sensations, and the emotional control that he had in those situations and replicate them. And that's something that is a real skill to me. Every single one of us at some stage in our cricket career would have either closed out the game with the ball or with the bat. It doesn't matter what level, we'd have done that. But there's also a lot of us that would have discounted that success and not necessarily reviewed effectively and just taken it as a good experience rather than really getting the nuts and bolts out of it. But somebody like Faulkner, and it's interesting to hear his post-match interviews, always talks about an innings in India where he got Australia over the line. Every time that he finishes one of these games off, he always refers back to that. And every time that he converts it, he reviews, he takes all of the experiences, he remembers how he coped with certain things, and then he takes that information and that confidence into his next innings of that type of ilk. And that's a skill. That's something that we can all learn from, I think. And if I look back on my own career, I was fantastic at getting 70 and then leaving it for somebody else. And it was something that I didn't do enough. When I did eventually get us over the line, I didn't recreate that experience and learn from that experience enough when I went into following games. So to me, there's an innate bit, which is character, but also there's some Faulkner skill stuff that we can all learn from.
So a lot of it is related to personality. A lot of it is also, of course, related to conditions, but a lot of it's related to personality. Leivis, do you think you see more players who are calmer under pressure at the kind of level that you're coaching at than there used to be?
I think possibly some people are a bit more relaxed and calm about what's going on, and I think there's I think in the modern game there's a lot less criticism of people who are dismissed in what could be regarded as a reckless manner, because it's a lot more the game's much more positive these days. So I think there's potentially less criticism at the end if someone plays the wrong shot, well, what's perceived to be the wrong shot, which often can be the right shot. Just because someone's being aggressive doesn't mean it's the wrong thing to do, which I think in the past we've been guilty of, probably in England more than anywhere else, thinking that aggressive cricket is often the wrong way to play, and if you get out doing it, you're doing the wrong thing. Well, actually, believe it or not, I actually wrote an article about this about 24 hours ago after an email from David, give me a hurry up. And it almost mirrors the question, actually. I mean, I was thinking, why are there so many match winners in a team now, and also can county cricket match these types of cricket in the IPL in terms of a spectacle? Because can we produce innings like we have done? And in the last, I don't know, 7 days, I think, pretty much 7 or 8 days, we must have seen 6 or 7 unbelievable performances from Saha and Pandey in the final, but Rayner in one of the most devastating innings I've ever seen, off 26 balls or whatever, 87 off 25, 26 balls, which was incredible, and Corey Anderson and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, the list of them goes on, and I was thinking, why are these things happening? Why are we getting so many people in this environment playing such devastating innings? And one of the things I think is that helps that is that when you have a side with one or two match winners in, as if you look at most county sides, they'll have one or two, possibly three guys who can go out and play a devastating innings, then there's an element of responsibility that maybe curbs their aggression and enthusiasm to go and be positive. And if you know that the top six is full of them, and if we look through the two top sixes in the final of the RPL, for example, 10 of those guys had scored, 10 of those guys had previously scored 80 or more in a 2020 match. And five or six of those guys had previously scored 100. So you've got no fears that around you, if you do get out and if you are too positive, there's another guy who can come in and take up the reins and do the same thing. So there are some pretty special batting lines, which not only means that the skills on show are higher, but also I think one of the phrases used in the question is those players are freed up a little bit more because there's less pressure on them as an individual within a team. Whereas if Glenn Maxwell comes over and plays for Hampshire this year, which he will do, I think, and plays, it's all about him. And obviously there's an element of when he plays, the focus is on him. But when you've got Salag at the top of the order, who's just scored 100, and you've got David Miller just next to you in the order, who's scored all sorts of runs, and Saha, who's thrashing the ball around the park, then it is a slightly different situation, and there is less pressure because you are less of you're carrying the load or the weight of responsibility slightly less, and it's spread throughout the team.
Okay, well, I think that is a pretty comprehensive answer. So thanks for the question, Cups, and maybe there's a couple of things that people can take into their own game there. There are 60 seconds on the clock. There's Sam Lavery ready to give us his classic British whinge. Over to you, Lavers.
Okay, well, as I said, classic British whinge. My whinge is firmly based around the weather, but it's a little bit more cricket-specific than just the fact that I'm whinging because it's raining. I think we're now getting to a stage where we're long overdue trying to think about adjusting the season a little bit. I've been probably spent the last three or four seasons watching the rain, even in one of the driest parts of the country, watching the rain and probably missing 50% of the first 10 fixtures that we play down here in Hampshire. And because of that, it's extremely disappointing, extremely frustrating. And we find that a lot of cricketers are probably spending more time training indoors than outdoors and getting more out of pre-season than actual the season. So I'm thinking, can we try and get that season pushed back by a couple of weeks and enjoy those lovely September days where the sun is out shining and we've got no cricket left to play, rather than starting in late April, early May, putting up with the rain and losing lots of cricket.
And that is the end of the show for this week. There's a couple of things we need to do before we go, so let's get that sorted out right now. The first of those is that we need to decide on the winner of this week's competition. Elvis had a question about fitness, Cups had a question about chasing down runs. Which one did you prefer this week, Harris?
Oh, I love Cups' one. I thought we had a really good discussion about Cups' question. Chasing runs and finishing the game off is crucial, isn't it? And hopefully there's a couple of things in there that will help out the club player this weekend.
Marvellous. Congratulations to you, Berners. If somebody wanted to get in touch with the show and send in their question, maybe you win the prize, but definitely get that question answered if it's read out on the show. How would they get in touch with us?
They can give us a quick call. The number 020-323-97543, or drop us an email. It's coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, it is. Our Twitter is at PitchVisionAcad. Brand new picture there of my smiling face. Our Facebook is facebook.com/PitchVisionAcademy. Lots of chat going on there. And you can subscribe to this show and listen to it every week if you want. Just simply head over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details on how to subscribe any way that you want. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Lavers. Cheers, Berners. Cheers, Garris.
Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, guys.
Everybody ready?
See you later.
Right, I'm free, sorry.
Okay.
Mr. Ellison wanting to organise a lunch date. And he's had his hair cut as well, so I can't resist.
How is he?
Yeah, he's great, mate. He's a legend.